I'm a desperate man. Send lawyers, guns and money. This shit has hit the fan.
Hi folks, Bob Main here with another episode of the Handgun World Show. And the reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. I believe the Second Amendment is what makes all the other amendments possible. So this is a practical show, practical firearms podcast. I'm not a gunsmith or ex-law enforcement or ex-military, and I'm not a firearms trainer. I'm just a private citizen, just a Yankee with a gun. Born in New York City, raised in Wisconsin, now I live in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And this is episode number 78. And you know, it's interesting, 78, I mean, I'm closing in, gosh, I mean, it's only going to be a few more months, I guess, four more months, and I'll hit episode 100. I just did episode 100 of my survivalism podcast that I do called Today's Survival Show. I just hit that milestone about 5 or 6 weeks ago. So anyway, this is fun. This is so much fun, folks. I think we'll have a good time once I hit episode 100 here on this show. I'm going to talk about the low-light shooting experience that I recently had at an IDPA match. So you're hearing this on August 18th, 2010, Wednesday. As you notice, I'm trying to publish all my shows on Wednesday. It seems like most people wanted me to do once a week for 45 minutes or so to an hour, and that's good. That's actually working out better for me, and it's probably working out good for all of you to keep caught up on the shows. But what you're going to hear was recorded last Thursday on the 12th of August. My buddy James and I, we're shooting buddies, and we like to go to IDPA matches together and then talk to you about it. So it was a low-light match. Now, this is, you know, I'm not going to spoil the interview. You're going to find out a lot about what happened in the interview. But I just want to say something, folks. You need to make sure that you practice your shooting in low-light conditions. And I'm on the road right now, folks, and it's daytime. And so if you hear a little background noise in my podcast, it's because I'm driving. And it's daytime, and so I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, well, gee, if something happens to me right now, somebody tries to assault me while I'm in my vehicle, carjack me, whatever happens, it's daylight, I can take care of it, no problem. But what if it happens at night? And that's something I really never thought about, you know? And this really, this match that I shot just really opened my eyes to what I need to be prepared for as a good shooter. Because obviously, sure, you know, crimes happen at night, and they happen in twilight hours when you can't see very well, where it's hard to see your sights and it's hard to see the target. And I realized I was not prepared for that, not at all prepared for that. So I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time here telling you all about it, because you're going to hear me flip on the interview from last Thursday night, and James and I are going to tell you about it together. By the way, James has agreed to help me co-host this show. His military background and some of the training that he's received in the past, I think, is a valuable addition to this show. And there's one other person I'm considering bringing on that's pretty good with competitive shooting. So I'm thinking about having him help me co-host this show once in a while. It's important that you hear from other people besides me. This is a listener-based show, and I want to keep it that way. So let me go ahead and cut to the interview. Again, boy, I was not prepared for shooting in the dark. And you have to be. You have to be. You can't neglect shooting in the dark. I mean, you know, come on, folks. If you're going to be a well-rounded shooter and you're going to defend yourself in any environment, you gotta shoot in the dark or in low light. Hopefully this interview will tell you a little bit about how to pick your sights, what kind of a light to get, when to carry a light, how to carry a light, and so forth. We're going to talk a little bit about that in this interview. So here you go. Just about 10 seconds worth of music here, and then you'll hear our interview. I'll be back on with some comments after the interview. And then segment number two, I'm going to cover a whole bunch of good listener feedback. Some interesting questions you're going to want to hear the answers to. All right, here's the interview. It's another Thursday night. Guess what? Thursday night, the 11th. Is that what it is, James?
12th, sorry. That's what happens when you get old. You forget stuff. It's another Thursday night, the 12th of August. And once again, Cross Timbers IDPA. And I'm with my buddy James. And as a matter of fact, James has agreed to help me co-host this show. So you're probably going to hear him on the podcast a couple times a month. You ready for that?
Oh, yeah.
All right, he says he's ready. We'll see. We're going to put the pressure on him. Anyway, an IDPA recap again. Now, we had a big surprise because James and I came to this IDPA match, and we found out something that we didn't know. What was it?
They were doing low-light shooting, and neither one of us were really well prepared.
We were not prepared. It was a low-light match. I didn't check the website. I didn't know it was a low-light match, and so we were not prepared. We show up here just with our regular gear, and what happened?
Well, I was excited to find out that we were going to get to do it, but I didn't have a flashlight. We were going to use yours, but turns out I haven't got to do my classification yet, and so anybody who's not classified, at least as a marksman, wasn't able to shoot, so I didn't get to shoot tonight.
And I think that kind of sucks, but I understand why. You know, it's a safety precaution, and IDPA is all about safety, and they should be. So James didn't get to shoot, unfortunately, because he's not classified. And, of course, I classify every year. But lesson learned, and I guess the next time we need to get you to a classifier, pal.
Yeah, I work on Saturdays, so that seems to be the only time that they're available here. So I just haven't got around to doing it. I want to do it, but
we'll figure something out. Anyway, a low-light match. So basically, we're indoors. They shut the lights off on the range, and when it's time to shoot, we got to turn on our flashlights and shoot with only the light that our flashlight gives off. What did you think when you saw some of that stuff?
Well, there was a lot of different ways that people were holding their lights and ways that they were using them. Some of them were holding them up a little higher, lighting up their sights. Some of them were, holding them below. I thought it was pretty interesting. And the way they set up the course, there was some different obstacles that they put in place tonight that were different than normal.
Like a moving target.
They had a moving target. I thought that was one of the coolest things. They actually, just like when you would normally go to the range, the way that you bring your target in to look at it, they had that hooked up. And as soon as you illuminated your light, that they would send that target coming at you. You'd have to put three rounds in it.
Yeah, now shooting a moving target in low light, that's tough.
Yeah, and they also had some barrels set up that you had to actually get inside and look through them and stick your gun up inside the barrel and
your flashlight inside the barrel
and your flashlight and shoot inside there. And on top of everything else, that made them, it just echoed and it made a real loud report back from that.
Now, we were using handheld flashlights. There was only one stage tonight where they allowed a rail-mounted light on the gun. Otherwise, we had to use handheld flashlights. And that's a challenge. I got to say, this is the first time I had ever tried doing this. I'd always wanted to come to a low-light match. Again, I wasn't expecting it to be that, but it was a pleasant surprise. And it's amazing how people work a light. And it's amazing what you have to think about to work a light. I mean, you know, if you're in a home defense situation and it's dark in your house and you got to flick that flashlight on with one hand and shoot with the other hand, makes it a challenge, isn't it?
Well, that and, the fact that you're still having to change magazines and you're having to handle a light, handle a magazine, change that magazine out, turn your light off during that time or you get penalized.
Yep.
You know, and they had one where you're shooting behind a car door, and
the car door, yeah.
Had to pull your light down, and I had a little tip for Bob and.
Yeah, now let me tell you, James gave me a good tip. Instead of turning my flashlight off between reloads, he just told me to stick it underneath my armpit. And that was a good idea because nobody can see the light. That was the goal, right?
That's right.
Nobody can see the light because you remain a target if the bad guy can see your light while you're reloading. So I stuck it under my armpit, and that was, I got to give James credit for that. Thanks.
I just thought that, going back to the thing with the fine motor skills and all that, that if you're actually having to do that, you'd probably be better off instead of trying to flick a little switch and put your flashlight back in your belt, tucking it in somewhere, and then change them. You would probably be better off to just jam it up into your armpit, which is a real common place to hold things anyway.
Yeah, it is.
You just stick something under your arm if you're trying to hold it and grab for your keys or whatever. Stick it under your armpit, grab your magazine, stick a new one in there, and it's only about 4 or 5 inches from where your gun's at anyway when you're holding it up by your chest. So you could you know, it's a real quick and easy movement to maintain and to remember.
And it worked great, except the first time I jammed it into my armpit a little too hard. That hurt.
Yeah, especially with some sharp edges on it.
But I'm not going to care. If it's a real self-defense situation and I jam that light into my armpit to hold it while I'm reloading, if it hurts, I don't give a crap because I'm going to stay alive.
But the light was... It was pretty interesting to see people trying to fire with using a handheld light.
And for me, being a first timer, I wish you could have got to shoot it. But we'll get you classified so you can come to a low light match. But for me, doing this for the first time, it was quite a challenge. I suggest anybody get to a low light match. What else did you notice out there?
I saw some things that I thought were kind of enforcing maybe some bad habits on people.
Like what?
Well, a lot of times the cover, and especially, it seems like they're real lenient on it tonight. I don't know if they'd normally be that way, but a lot of people, almost everybody actually that I saw, they were putting their flashlight up to where the cover was, and they were reaching way past it. I mean, you know, maybe a foot past or 8 to 10 inches.
Yeah, one guy was sticking his whole gun and half of his arm out past the cover.
And
bad move.
Exactly. And if you do that, you're just asking to, you know, if somebody's behind that cover, they may snatch your weapon and
that's a bad move whether it's low light or not.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter when it is. Just cover, period. You should stay back away from it and kind of move out and shoot around it instead of trying to reach past it. And I just noticed almost everybody doing that tonight.
Yeah, I agree. Now, I got to ask you something, James, because you served us in the Marine Corps 12 years, right?
That's right.
All right. First of all, thanks for your service. The other thing is you were telling me some stories while we were in the range about using lights when you're in the Marine Corps and what you had to do when you were in the Corps and what guys are doing today. So why don't you talk about a little bit about what you did in your training in the Marine Corps and how that compared or didn't compare to what you saw tonight.
Well, a lot of the training that we did, it wasn't we didn't get to do quite as intense movement and dodging behind cover and stuff like this for training on the range, but we did low light shooting. We did handheld flashlights, things like that. We used, you know, we were outdoors on a range and we'd use flares. We'd shoot flares up in the air to illuminate the area, and then you shoot. What you'd watch for is you'd watch for the silhouettes and the shadows moving across the ground.
Yeah, they wouldn't let me bring my flares into the range tonight.
No. And another thing, like with our M16s, if we were doing something going into a building where we knew it was going to, you know, a possibility of darkness or whatever,
yeah,
we would duct tape like mag lights onto our M16s so that we had them there available. Now, I got out, about 6 to 7 years ago, and things have changed with the wars going on in Iraq and Afghanistan. They've really up-tempoed the upgrading of the weapon systems and everything that they have. And, you know, they've got lights that actually mount onto the weapons now and things like that. So they've really, the weaponry has advanced a whole lot.
Yeah, but when, you know what, when you saw some people in there today holding a flashlight and shooting a pistol with the other hand, did it kind of remind you of some of that?
Some of it, yeah. And there were some people in here that you could tell. I mean, they've trained.
Yeah, some of them are pretty darn good at that.
Yeah, they've done some training in that, and some of them haven't. And I know
I haven't.
Well, and I know we discussed right away when we first came in, you know, I went over a couple of things with you that just from my training. That's what I was saying, is that for me, it's a habit, and it's what I prefer, and you were trying some different things.
Yeah, and it was great. You know, sorry to interrupt you, but I was a rookie tonight. I was a rookie because this was something I had never done. I've been shooting IDPA, I think it's pretty close to 5 years now, but I had never had a chance to come to a low light. So in the last few weeks, there's been a couple of firsts. I got to shoot a backup gun match for the first time and got to shoot a low light match for the first time. So I got some pointers from you as we got started. Thanks for doing that.
And I didn't even get to shoot, but just because something works for me, that's what, you know, we were talking about, is that may not be what works for you. That's just what I have as a habit. I've trained to do it. It just feels natural for me to cross my arms a certain way and hold a flashlight. It may not work for you. There may be a better way for you, but whatever's comfortable and whatever makes you feel, you know, the most comfortable while you're shooting, that's what's going to work the best, you know?
Yeah. Now, what I practiced tonight is I was using my Glock 19, and I practiced resting my strong hand on top of my weak hand wrist and holding the flashlight with my weak hand and trying to light up the targets and then, of course, shoot. Now, for the listener's benefit, I was shooting my Glock 19 with the TrueGlow TFO sights. I got to tell you, in low light, those sights are fantastic. They may not be good sights for everybody or for all situations. I happen to like them. I've been shooting those sights a long time. But tonight, man, I tell you what, those sights just jump right out. So all I had to do is, I just used my flashlight to light up the target. I saw other people using their flashlight to actually be able to see the sights on their gun. I didn't have to worry about that.
Yeah, I did see a lot of people using that light, and what I noticed is there were a lot of people who, you could tell the people who hadn't done it because they kind of tended to change the way they were holding their light every time.
That's right, yeah.
And they were trying different ways to see what would work better for them. And a brighter light is definitely better.
Yeah, my light sucked. What I had to do is, since I got here and I didn't know it was a low light match, I always keep an emergency bag in my car. People have heard me talk about that on my podcast. Well, this is where the emergency bag really paid off, because I got a flashlight in my emergency bag. So I just ran out to the car and I got it. But next time I'm coming with a lot brighter light. I actually have a good tactical flashlight. It's not a fancy Surefire. I didn't spend that much money. But the one I have is more tactical. And you know, my light, what really sucked is my light, you have to turn it on the side of the light. I couldn't flick it on with my thumb. You need to have one of those lights, don't you? One of those types.
Oh, yeah. Well, and for the way that you grip the flashlight in this kind of shooting, it doesn't, you're not holding it, straight out. Basically, the light end is pointing out on the end of your pinky, that end of your hand.
Yeah.
And so, yes, you want one with the button at the end to be able to turn it on and off and use it more effectively. You were trying to grip the side, and it was kind of
awkward. Sucked because, you know, in between shooting positions, you have to turn your light off. And then when you get to the next shooting position, you have to turn it on again. And then when you reload, you're supposed to turn it off. Of course, I flipped it under my arm like you taught me, and that way I didn't have to turn it on and off. And that actually worked out great because my light was real hard to turn on and off. Now I see the benefit of a good tactical flashlight where it's easy to turn on and turn off. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, that's definitely an advantage. Well, and, you know, what I saw with a lot of people, too, is that when they would, they'd have to turn their light off, and this comes back to the muscle memory and the stuff like that, but
right.
People were having trouble doing reloads in the dark, and there's really no reason you should, because, you know, it's all the same, and it should just be grabbing it from your belt, putting it in, and letting it go home. You know, it's...
Well, as a matter of fact, you know, the fact that you bring up reloads in the dark, let's talk about that. I didn't have any problem doing reloads in the dark tonight. And maybe that's something people should practice. Dry fire, double check and triple check, make sure your gun's unloaded, go into a dark room, and practice your reloads.
Yeah, it can't hurt, but it is something you need to practice because...
You gotta do it by feel.
You shouldn't... You, even if you don't have a dark room, you should be able to close your eyes and just reload, reload, reload.
Yeah, it should be one fluid motion. You should be able to grab that magazine, insert it into the magwell, ram that thing home, and not even really have to look at what you're doing. And of course, if you are shooting in darkness or in low light, you can't say, wait, Mr. Bad Guy, let me flick my flashlight on and find my magazine and make sure I can see where I'm putting it inside my gun before you shoot at me.
And something I thought was interesting that you said you do, and I think it's a really good, we had a little discussion about it, but is like in your house, just having a couple lights around your house that you leave on overnight.
I do that.
So that, because my point was, look, if you step into a room and it's completely dark and that guy's in that house, most break-ins and stuff happen during the day, and I understand that, but we're just saying in the scenario that it's dark. You step out into a room, and you've got to scan for this guy. You've got to turn your light on, and if he's at the far right and you scan left to right, or if he's at the far left and you scan right to left, whichever way you go, if he's at the opposite side, he's going to be able to see you turn that light on.
Yes, he will.
And see where you're at as you're scanning and looking for him.
And he can fire at you.
He's already got an eye on you, and he can take you out while you're looking for him. Where if the lights are already on out there, it gives you the ability to poke your head around the corner and just kind of look for him, and he may not even know that you're you're aware of him yet.
That's a good point. And see, I leave small lamps on all throughout my house when we're sleeping. I don't do it in my bedroom. I don't leave a lamp on while we're sleeping, but throughout the house. And that's why, because I always thought, well, I want to be able to have the advantage. I don't want to have to flick a light on or try to retrieve a flashlight and my gun at the same time. You brought up a good point, James. You said, you know, it's tough to draw your gun and your flashlight at the same time.
Yeah, and that's another thing. You know, the only place that I can see, honestly, that a flashlight would be a big advantage is if you're outdoors, you're caught somewhere in your vehicle and you have to step out onto a dark street or, you know, coming out of a building or something like that, but into a dark area. But yeah. In your home, I really think the leaving the lights, cause, you know, even if there are night lights that are plugged in throughout your house, or something to put a little ambient light out there where you can actually see
right.
without having to alert them to your position. And what I was relaying to you in there about was how we would probe, you know, defensive positions in the Marine Corps, and just to find out where people's weapons are, and we'd use their muzzle flashes to
index where they were,
to map where they're at, and then go find, you know, we could plot that on a map, and we could make our plans a little bit better. And the same thing in this, you turn on a flashlight, you're immediately marking your position, and you know, if you don't know where that guy is already, he's kind of at an advantage in that point.
If you're
in a completely dark room, if you don't shine the light on him immediately, just by luck, right in his direction, you're not going to. You're kind of putting yourself at a disadvantage.
So, what do you think about a rail-mounted light on your pistol? You like that or not?
I like it because it's available to you. Like I said, in the situations where you come out of a building and you're in a dark alley, or you're on a dark street, or in a parking lot, or something, and you may need it.
What do you think about keeping that light on your home defense pistol all the time?
I think it's a good idea. I mean, it can't hurt, and
you don't have to use it.
You don't have to use it, but if you do need it, it's right there.
Yeah, if there's
go ahead. You're not having to find a flashlight or, you know, something like that.
Oh. Yeah, well, and what I was thinking is you don't have to turn it on. So if there's already enough light for you to see the bad guy, just don't turn your light on. That way he won't know where your position is. But if you have to use it, it's there, it's on the gun, it's on the rail, then you can use it.
Exactly. And you may even, you know, even with the little ambient lighting, you may be able to even see where the guy is, but once you see him, maybe you want to illuminate him and bring that target up where you could see it a little better. He may be in a dark corner or hidden, you know, behind something where he's in a shadow, and you can see him, but you want to light him up so you can really get a good good sight picture.
It's a judgment call, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I mean, I do keep that light on my Glock 34. My Glock 34 is my home defense pistol, and I keep a light on that, and that's in my safe. So if I have to retrieve that out of my safe, it's already got the light on it, and I can easily. I use the Glock brand light, so it's real easy for me to flip on, so I can use it if I want to, and not use it if I don't.
Plus some of those bright lights, I mean, they're pretty bright, and you can use them to actually blind the guy and maybe to, you know...
Yeah, you could.
That could give you a little bit of an advantage. Because once you... Like in here tonight, there was a lot of times that people would flash their lights on, and then all of a sudden you can't see because you lose your night vision as soon as the light gets shined in your eyes.
Yeah, oh, speaking of that, there was a stage. There was a stage, the last stage. Now, I really blew that stage, but it was kind of cool because when the buzzer goes off, they actually flipped on a strobe light, and then you had to draw your gun and turn your light on, and I got to tell you, that sucked. That strobe light just really messes up your concentration and your vision.
And that strobe light was hanging from a wire up above, and when you started the stage, it was inside a tube, and as soon as they said go, you had to pull the tube off it, and it started swinging. And it was supposed to simulate, like, police strobe lights, you know, something going on in the area, and you still got to... Because those things, I mean, especially at night, if you've seen them in your rearview mirror or wherever, they're pretty bright, and they can really affect your vision.
Yeah, and it was great practice because, you know, I mean, yeah, you could find yourself in that situation. And, you know, I mean, all this kind of stuff, coming to a low-light match like this, you just can't practice this stuff on your own. There's no way to do it.
And that's the best thing about this. Like you said, the last three matches we come, it's all been new stuff that they've been
new
doing.
Stuff, yeah.
And
things you cannot practice at an ordinary range.
things you can't practice pretty much anywhere. I mean, it's hard to get somewhere where you can go out shooting at night.
Or what are you going to do, go out in the woods by yourself? And I guess you could do that, but...
And you might have somebody getting called on you then, because
exactly.
Hearing gunshots in the middle of the night, they're not...
Yeah. So I know that there's people listening to the show, and I'm one of them also, that believe that IDPA is not the end-all and be-all to your training, but it does give you practice like... shooting your backup gun, shooting low light matches, stuff like that. So that's why I think I like to encourage people to come and participate in these. What do you think?
Well, I think it's something that gives you an opportunity to shoot in a lot of ways and a lot of conditions and things that you normally wouldn't be able to. And it's pretty cheap, you know what I mean? It's you're not having to spend a weekend
$15
and a bunch of money to go train in this kind of thing. At a special school or something. It's just, you can come out on a Thursday night or Wednesday or Saturday morning.
Exactly.
And just go hang out for 3 or 4 hours and shoot, you know.
Yeah.
And you get the experience. The other thing that I like about it is that not only do you learn from the things that you do and the mistakes you made, you get to see other people and learn some of the good things that they do, and you get to see how they screw up and learn some of the bad things without doing them yourself.
And watch people drop flashlights.
Yeah, people are dropping flashlights.
Dropping lights, and, you know, yeah, you can see some of the good things, and, you know, I could tell some of these guys are really trained at this. They've practiced this stuff, and some of them were like me out there fumbling around doing it for the first time.
Well, and you know, it, not to pick on you, but...
Go ahead, pick on me.
It makes a good point where, you know, you got... flustered on that last stage.
I did, yeah.
And there was another stage, they didn't actually catch you doing it, but you did it a little earlier, where you kind of got, you couldn't see the targets, and you got a little flustered, and you racked your slide, and which actually sent out, I don't know if you were confused or
what. I sent a round out that I shouldn't have done.
You ejected a round, which they consider to be the same thing as dropping a magazine, leaving a magazine on the ground, whatever.
Yeah, I did it one time, and they didn't catch me doing it, because it was dark.
And and the darkness helps you in some ways on this tonight.
Well, for IDPA rules. But the second time they caught me doing it, it's because I got flustered. And part of my problem was tonight my light wasn't bright enough. So I was barely able to see the targets. Now, that's good practice. But I guess on the last stage, I just kind of got tired. I kind of got flustered. And this really puts you in a stressful position. And that's good. That's good practice to get into that stressful position, you know, because, it's something you can't practice by standing there and plinking the shooting under stress like a low-light match like tonight.
Yeah, that kind of stuff builds your mechanics and your basic skills of shooting.
Yeah.
Pressing your trigger and all that kind of stuff.
And your gun handling skills.
But this actually, it does. It gives you some good things to practice that you wouldn't get to practice otherwise. But and it also, like I said, some of the people, it does reinforce some bad habits if you let yourself get into that. So
yeah, if
you have to be careful of what you're doing.
And safety is important anyway, but in a low light match, boy, safety is 5 times even more important, because it's so easy to screw something up in the dark and the safety officers can't see it, and it's a challenge out there.
And safety's paramount, and especially on a night like tonight. I understood when they told me that.
I felt bad for you, though.
Well, but I understood the safety aspect that they sent. I think there was 4 or 5 of us they sent out of here.
And yeah, I think there was.
And one guy actually had steel core ammo anyway, so it's a good thing.
No steel core ammo, not in an indoor range, uh-uh.
And he actually ended up getting caught with it over at when he went over, he was going to shoot at the other range across the street here. And then, but, you know, it's, I understand why they can't do that. It doesn't matter how much, I mean, I could tell them, hey, I've shot in the dark, I've done this, I've done that. It doesn't matter, because anybody could tell them anything. They want to know that they know you, and they've seen you shoot enough.
I think your 12 years of training in the Marines probably would have... You wouldn't have been a safety risk tonight, but they didn't know that.
No, and they don't know that. That's what I mean. It's I don't hold anything against them in in that respect.
So, I want to bring this point up. If you want to shoot a lot of IDPA, those of you listening to this show, get classified. Because if you're not classified, you can't shoot the backup gun matches, technically. Mm-hmm. and you can't shoot the low light matches technically, unless they want to make an exception, and they usually are probably not going to do that.
Yeah, and it's understandable. I can't do a classifier here.
We'll try to find a classifier during the week for you.
Yeah, because they do them on Saturdays here, and I work on Saturdays. So
we need to search around and look. We may have to make a drive, but I bet you we can find a place, find some club that's doing a classifier on a weekday.
Oh, that'd be all right.
Now, before we sign off, in the next show, James and I are going to get together next Tuesday night. So by the time you hear this show, we will have already done our revolver test. We're going to get together, we're going to rent some revolvers, and we're going to talk about it, and we're going to YouTube video it, right?
Yeah, we tried to make some tonight, but it was a little too dark for your iPod.
Yeah, that didn't work. But we're going to rent some revolvers, we're going to kind of give our opinions on what we think of the revolvers, and then we're going to do another test next Tuesday. James has never shot a Glock, right?
Never.
He's never shot a Glock. So the show I did about grip angle, we're going to try to prove something or disprove something. I'm going to put my Glock into James's hands for the first time next Tuesday, and he's going to shoot it, and we're going to see how well he does, how a first-time Glock shooter does. And I've never shot his Beretta PX4. So I'm a Glock guy, and I'm going to pick up that double-action, single-action Beretta, and I'm going to shoot that for the first time. You looking forward to that?
Oh, yeah. I'm excited. I think it'll be a lot of fun.
In fact, what we're going to do, we're going to YouTube this. We're going to rent two lanes, and James is going to use my Glock 19 on one lane, and I'm going to use his PX4 on the other lane. Both of us shooting the guns for the very first time, and we'll do a little podcast on it, and we'll do a YouTube video on it.
Yeah, it sounds like fun.
So there's some of you guys out there, I know you've been wanting me to talk about revolvers, and I don't like to talk about guns that I've never shot. So we're going to rent them, we're going to shoot them, then I'll talk about them, and then we'll do the Glock versus Beretta PX4 comparison.
I'm looking forward to it.
And what we're going to do is we're either going to prove that grip angle matters, or we're going to prove that it doesn't matter. Because you're a decent shooter. And so you're well trained. I mean, you're a pretty decent shooter already. So we'll see what happens when you pick up the Glock, and we'll see if that grip angle is a big deal or not. What's your gut feeling?
I am one of the believers of the fact that if you pick up a gun and you line up the sights, you're going to hit whatever it's.
Now you're not just saying that because I'm sitting here.
No, this is my belief. And,
all right,
and I could be proved wrong. That's why I want to find out. I want to see if I could pick this thing up. I understand if you're point shooting at something. If you just pick up a gun and you're used to a certain grip angle, I believe that if you just pick it up and point shoot it, you may shoot in a different spot with something with a different grip angle because it's your muscle memory and the way that you hold it. Now, if you line up the sights, obviously it should hit whatever, you know, you should be able to have the thing.
Yes, it should.
Like a rifle is 180 degrees, basically. It's just a straight thing, and you're grabbing that grip in a different way, but you still hit what you're aiming at.
Well, we're going to figure it out. Like I said, we're either going to prove it or we're going to disprove it. And, you know, that again, our test might not be the end-all, be-all, but I think some people... Stay tuned, folks, if you're listening, because, like I said, you're not going to hear this show till Wednesday, next week Wednesday, which I think is the... I think it's the 16th. Right. So we're going to do our little thing on the 15th. Next Tuesday. I think next Tuesday. Whatever.
Tuesday's the 17th.
Tuesday's the 17th. Whatever. Anyway, it's late at night. I can't think straight. But anyway, so you guys will have to wait about a week after you hear this show to hear the results of our little test. But I'm looking forward to it.
I am too. I think it'll be interesting, and it'd be fun to just go out shooting for a day. And
yeah, absolutely. There you go. There you go. Hey, buddy, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Thanks for doing this. Sorry again you didn't get to shoot tonight, but as an observer, it seems like you saw some things I didn't get to see because I was too worried about shooting.
Well, there is an advantage, I guess, to sitting back and watching, but I would have rather been shooting.
I know. I'm sorry about that. But anyway, thanks for doing this, and we'll do it again next week with our little test.
All right. I'll see you next week.
All right. Have a good one.
Thanks.
Okay, everybody, I am now back in my vehicle. James went home. I'm driving home from the match, so it's still Thursday night, August 12th, 2010. Again, this is recorded, pre-recorded in the past, but I just got to make a few comments here about that interview. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed doing it. The low light shooting match was a really cool experience. And it brought a couple things to my mind. You know, that's one of the things I love about shooting and self-defense and the shooting sports and training to defend yourself with a gun. It's like anything else. You're constantly a student. And I want to encourage all of you who listen to this show, always be a student. Just when you think you know stuff, you realize you don't. And you know, that's what this does. That's what competition does, competition shooting does for you. That's what combat training does for you. Even sitting in a class and listening to somebody lecture about the defensive use of force, the judicious use of force, as Masoud Ayoub and many other instructors out there do, even just doing something like that, the more you know, the more that you know you need to know. And so if I have not been able to convince you yet to get involved in the shooting sports and go get training, maybe tonight's interview and the recap of tonight's match and showing you on an audio podcast, the best way that I can, what you can experience by going to a low-light match like this. And a couple weeks ago, the backup gun match that we went. Hopefully, maybe that'll convince you. Maybe that will motivate you to get out there and do it. It is a perishable skill. And I realized a couple of other things. I got to get a better flashlight, a couple of them, and I got to get a really decent rail-mounted light on my gun. I didn't get a chance to bring my Glock light, but I don't think that's going to do the trick. You know, they're cool. One thing I like about the Glock rail-mounted lights is that it snaps on and snaps off the gun real easy. That's a plus. The way that it snaps on the gun, the way that it pops off. It takes, you know, a mere half a second to get it on and get it off. That's good. But I don't think the quality of the light is good enough. After I saw some of the lights I saw tonight, I think I'll be investing in a new light pretty soon. I just plunked down the money for the close-range gunfighting class with Suarez International. So the light may have to wait another month or so, but I'm going to get one. And speaking of that, by the way, next week you're going to hear about our test, as we talked about, the Glock versus Beretta PX4 first-time shooter test. And you're also going to hear us talk about revolvers. The week after that, I'll be broadcasting some info from my close-range gunfighting class that I'm taking. I'm going to try to interview a couple people, a couple shooters, a couple students there that are going to be there with me. I'll try to do some interviews with them. I might get Glenn Matthews, the instructor, on, but if he doesn't want to come on and do the show, I understand that. That's fine. He's a nice guy. I may try to do that and get him on there. So that whole podcast that you're going to hear week after next is all going to be dedicated to close-range gunfighting and my experience at that two-day course. We're supposed to shoot about 500 or 600 rounds. It's two solid days, 9 to 5. And, of course, Gabe Suarez, he basically has designed that class. He says it's pretty much their flagship class. So I'm excited about that. So with all that said, let's take a quick break. For you, it's going to be 15 seconds. For me, it'll be a little bit longer. As a matter of fact, I'm almost home from my drive, so I'll probably wait a couple days and do segment number 2. Enjoy your 15 seconds here worth of music. I'm actually going to do I'm going to play a little commercial, just a little bit of a commercial here for the Gun Rights Radio Network as soon as I get done with this music, and then I'll be on for segment 2. Catch you in a bit.
The forums are a great place to interact with the podcasters and other listeners to your favorite podcast. Visit gunrightsradio.com and click on the forums button at the top of the page and sign up for your free membership. gunrightsradio.com.
All right, back with you for segment 2. I am actually between appointments, so I'm in my vehicle, but I've got some time to kill here, so I'm going to go ahead and finish the second half of the podcast. I want to start off with some listener feedback. You know, I get so much good stuff from you guys listening to this show. Thank you. Keep it coming. It really helps. And there are several ways you can contact me if you've got something you want to say about my shows. You can email me at bob@handgunworld.com, bob@handgunworld.com, and that's probably the easiest way to do it. If you want to go straight to the website, handgunworld.com, you can see a contact page on there, and you can send me a message through that. You can also go to the Facebook page. If you search Handgun World Show on Facebook, you'll find it. You can send me a message through there. On Twitter, my handle is IDPAShooter. IDPAShooter. You can send me a message through that as well. Lots of different ways to get a hold of me. Keep it coming. Okay, this is a really cool piece of feedback. And, you know, folks, sometimes I make mistakes on this show. I have no problem admitting when I make a mistake. And Officer David Hicks, who is a firearms instructor with the Trinity Police Department in Trinity, Alabama, sent me an excellent email about episode number 40. Apparently, he's going through some of my older episodes, which is good. And he's kind of setting me straight a little bit here. I talked about why guns jam. And this is some good stuff here. So I won't read it word for word, but let me paraphrase it. He says he just began listening to episode 40 on why guns jam, and he says, I just couldn't finish it until I sent you an email. He said, Bob, you start the show by saying guns frequently jam because they are dirty. As a firearms instructor for a couple of decades, I find the following reasons that handguns jam in order of frequency. And this is good stuff. So I stand corrected. Officer Hicks, I want to first of all tell you before I get into this. Sir, thank you very much for sending me this comment. This is good stuff. Also, thank you for your service as a police officer, too. Appreciate that. All right, he says, in order of frequency, the reasons why guns jam, number one, is because of ammo. Dirty ammo, burrs on the ammo, bullets seated too deeply, improper crimp. Number two, magazines. Damaged magazines, dirty magazines, weak springs, bent feed lips, lubrication, attracting dirt and causing a jam. Number three, shooter limp wristing, or the thumb rubbing on the slide, or the thumb holding up the slide stop. Number four, lubrication. He says, if a SIG doesn't drip all over the ground with lubrication, it won't run. And if a Glock has oil in the firing pin channel, it will cause light primer strikes. And then number five, a dirty gun. Depending on the make and the model, it has to be really dirty to jam. He says he's fired over 5,000 rounds through 1911s and Glocks without cleaning and had no problems. And he said at a recent Glock recertification class, the instructor gave the following diagnosis path for handgun issues. Shooter, ammo, maintenance, and mechanical. He says, hopefully this will give you a few items to ponder. I enjoy the shows, even if occasionally I hear something that lights me up. Keep up the good work, Officer David Hicks. Well, see, you know, Officer Hicks, let me tell you, it's my job to light you guys up. That's, you know, really seriously, though, I'm kind of chuckling, but hey, it's my job to get you thinking about stuff, and I'm not always going to be right, and sometimes I'm going to omit some things, so feel free to set me straight. And yeah, I agree with this. This is good stuff here. The five reasons, again, I'll go over it one more time, why handguns jam. Number one is ammo related. Number two, magazines. You know, I'm all about magazines. You know, that's one of the things I like about Glocks, is because it's difficult, I'm not saying impossible, but it's very difficult to screw up the magazine on a Glock. If you let the spring get weak, that's a problem. Just keep your springs changed. It's so easy to change out mag springs on a Glock. But yeah, thank you for sending me that. And of course, number three is the shooter, limp wristing. This is something also, too, I didn't think about. You know, your thumb rubbing on the slide, especially with 1911s, your weak hand thumb. Try not to do that. I like to use a thumbs forward grip with my Glocks, as I've demonstrated. But be careful of that. And then he says number four is lubrication, and number five is a dirty gun, but it's got to be really, really dirty before it jams. So, thanks, Officer Hicks. Appreciate you sending that to me. Now, this next one comes from Marianne. And this is a good one here. It's a long email, but I'm going to kind of give you the short version. She said she was listening to one of my podcasts the other day, and it brought up an interesting discussion in her household. My podcast started off with a story about a young dating couple where the female was so anti-gun that she would rather be raped and have a non police officer defend her life, and that is actually causing them to break up. I remember that show. I remember that. Yes. Now it's coming back. She says, it brought up an interesting discussion in my household. I told my husband that if when he proposed, had I not known how pro-gun he was, we would have never gotten married. Let me say that again. Marianne says she told her husband that if when he proposed to her, had she not known how pro-gun he was, they would have never gotten married. She said this revelation floored him. He had thought for all the time that he's known me, more than 10 years, that I would put up with guns and self-defense, but he had never pictured me being a pro-gun person. He had never pictured me willingly going to a firing range or into a gun store, and now he's finding out that I really am pro-gun, a pro-gun, pro-home defense person. And she goes on in the email to explain to me that she used to be a teacher in the state of California, and now that she's no longer a teacher anymore, I'm not going to go into all the details as to why, but she says after 15 years of being a teacher, she's now able to look forward to being a part of the pro-Second Amendment world and not fearing the backlash that she knows she would have faced in the world of liberal education. And this is really cool. She says, I'm now able to look forward to walking in a gun store and not worrying about some school official or whiny parent seeing my car parked in front. I'm now able to truly breathe deeply and talk openly about wanting gun training with my husband and not fear the loss of credential. I'm able to talk with him about different tactics and situational scenarios and different ways of handling them. And for the first time ever, I openly looked at the gun magazines at our local bookstore. So, though I know that mostly I'm going to be losing my teaching credentials at the stroke of midnight tonight, it might not be cause for a celebration in our family. And for most people, it will just pass without a stir. But I can tell you that for me, at the stroke of midnight, I will be listening to one of your podcasts and researching joining the NRA. Thank you for your time and for your podcasts, Bob. Marianne. That's great. You know, I got to tell you, folks, this is why I do this show. Truly. You know, when I can have an impact on people's lives, and I'm not trying to toot my own horn here, it's hard for me to talk about myself. It's even hard for me sometimes to get these compliments, folks. But I got to tell you, this is fun. This is what makes this podcast worthwhile. And I hope you do join the NRA, Marianne. Please do so. They're a great organization. They are absolutely doing, you know, we may not agree with everything that they do or say, but they are helping our gun rights. Also, consider becoming a member of the Second Amendment Foundation, which I got some more feedback here for you, a couple more emails, but let's talk about the Freedom Raffle real quick. The Second Amendment Foundation is still in the lead. If you send me money, folks, go to the Gun Rights Radio Network Forum and go to my section of it called the Handgun World Show, and there's a thread there that says, where do I send the money? Tell me where you want a third of the proceeds to go to. I am at 70 paid tickets so far. At the time of recording this, by the time you hear this, it might be higher. At the time of recording this, 70 paid tickets. I've raised $700 so far. My goal is 100 tickets. Help me get to my goal. There's a slight chance I might extend it just a little bit past September 1st, because there's people wanting to mail me money. And some people say they can't mail it until the 1st of September. But if I do extend it, it's not going to be too much longer. You're going to support gun rights, you're going to support the Gun Rights Radio Network, and you're going to support my show. A $10 raffle ticket, folks, is all it takes. And you can win a Ruger LCP. I'm giving away a gun, a nice concealed carry gun. Two people are going to win a $100 gift certificate to CompTac Holsters. Great stuff. Check out CompTac Holsters, and then also knivesandgear.com, $100 gift certificate to Knives and Gear. Get a new knife. Good stuff, $10. Do me a favor, those of you, if you're using the donate button, that's a PayPal link. As I said, I had to hold my nose and go back to PayPal because it was the only option I had. Just put the word freedom in the comments, or just leave the comments blank if you wish. I will know what the the purchase is for. That's it. I also want to say check out the YouTube channel. I just put a nice review up there on my Glock 19 that was done by GripProductions.com. Check that out. And don't forget about my Facebook page. Okay, another email comes from Mike. First of all, he addresses me, sir. Well, thank you very much, Mike. I appreciate that. You can just call me Bob. He says, I've recently become a listener of your podcast, and so far I've been impressed with what I've heard. Not too long ago, I started my own gun rights website. So let me give Mike a shout out here. He wanted to tell me about his website called shootingforliberty.org, www.shootingforliberty.org. And I did check it out, and I'm impressed. I like it. So if you're looking for another good gun blog, this is a good one. You know, I love frequenting all kinds of gun blogs. It's just fun. I love to suck in information. I'm a big sponge for firearms information. So here's another one to put on your list. Bookmark it, shootingforliberty.org. And so he asked me to check it out, and he says, let me know if you think if it sucks or not. Mike, it doesn't suck. It's a good website. I like it. Keep up the good work. Keep spreading the word and keep fighting for our rights. Thanks, Mike. Okay, now this next one I want to talk to you comes from a guy named Selden. Again, a long email, but I'm going to paraphrase this. He says, I just wanted to say thanks, and after listening to a few of your shows, I finally decided to get off of my blank and shoot an IDPA match. Last Monday, I did some checking on the internet and found a local match being held on Saturday. My carry gun is a Glock 19 with Savigny carry sights, carried appendix inside the waistband in a Dale Fricky Archangel holster. God, I love it, Selden. This is good stuff. I didn't by any chance influence you to get that equipment, did I? I was just wondering because, you know, that's my carry setup. Glock 19, Savigny carry sights, inside the waistband, appendix, Dale Fricky Archangel holster. As a matter of fact, that's what I'm going to be taking to the close-range gunfighting class next week at Suarez International. Anyway, he told me a little bit about the match. He says he had a good time shooting it. He was trying to slow down and focus on gun handling skills, using cover as much as possible, and even shooting ambidextrous because of cover. And there were about 15 shooters, and most of them had Glocks, Glock 34s, 1911s, a Glock 35, and two Glock 17s. Said he had a bunch of fun, but he was one of the only guys there shooting his carry gun. Now, I got to tell you, Selden, that's great. You know what? I wish more people would go to IDPA and shoot their carry gun. Seriously, I mean, yes, it's fun to go there and be a gamer. It's fun to use your Glock 34, your Smith & Wesson M&P Pro. It's fun to use an XDM 45. Man, I tell you what, one of the recent matches that I shot, a guy had an XDM 45, and that's a sweet, sweet gun. I'd never carry it, just too stinking big for me. But, wow, what a home defense weapon. And, of course, guys are there with their big tricked-out 1911s oftentimes at IDPA matches. Selden, I think it's great that you're going there shooting your carry gun because kind of refresh my memory, folks, but isn't that why IDPA started? International Defensive Pistol Association. Didn't that and USPSA start as a league, a competition league for people to go and practice with their carry guns? I think it did, if I'm not mistaken. It's kind of evolved into more of a game lately, but that's good. Keep shooting that Glock 19, Selden. I'm doing it for a year. Steve Z, who you're going to hear on the next podcast, has motivated me to do that. Spent a whole entire year training with my Glock 19 because it is my carry gun, and as I speak right now, it is in my Dale Fricky Archangel holster, appendix inside the waistband. Thanks for the email, Selden. Appreciate it. And finally, I won't let this drag on too long, folks, but you got to hear some of this good stuff that's been emailed to me. This one comes from Christian. I hope I haven't butchered that name, sir. But he says, hey, Bob, I rarely comment on things, but I have really enjoyed your show and wanted to thank you and tell you a little bit about me and how I came to the decision to carry concealed. This is a good story here, how he came to the decision to carry concealed. I think it's important that we hear success stories and hear testimonials from other people. People tend to relate to that, so I want to share this with you. He said, my wife and I were settled in for the night, and we were watching the news. a farmer's market that's less than a mile from our house had a shooting in the parking lot near the farmer's market. We both looked at each other and we said, wow, that's pretty close to home. My wife then commented that she didn't feel safe because it seemed like there were more break-ins and things going on around us. And I remember looking at her and saying, what can I do to help you feel safer? If I bought a gun and learned to use it, would you feel safer? She said, yes. So I spent about 2 months researching everything I could about different handguns and going to gun shops to look and hold them and try to get a feel for them and feel think about what would feel right in my hands. Well, my first purchase, and there'll be more to follow, and it's always been my favorite gun and my most accurate for me, says, I have fallen in love with my Glock 19. I love it. This is good. This is good. And again, folks, come on, please. I'm not trying to put down any of you that own M&Ps, XDMs, and 1911s, and Tauruses, and things, and revolvers. I'm not putting you down. I'm not putting you down. But you know, you have to kind of admit that I don't know, some reason, either the Glock 19 is just insanely popular out there, or I'm, again, I don't want to toot my horn, or I'm having an influence on people when I talk so much about it. I don't know. I think I need to go pick up my commission checks from both Kimber and Glock, because I motivated this guy here to get a Kimber Ultra CDP as well. But the best part of this email is he says he enrolled in a concealed carry class, and he took it 6 weeks later, and he also enrolled in some more training. And here's something else he said. He also purchased a dry fire practice manual from Front Sight. And he spent about 5 weeks, 20 minutes a night, going through all the different drills in hopes of not looking like a complete idiot his first time out when he was out training and competing. Now that I love. That is great. I mean, dry fire practice, I have not talked enough about that. And I know Rob Robideau at the Personal Armament Podcast, he's had Dave Spaulding on there quite a bit talking about dry fire practice and the Ready Shot product and stuff like that. You need to listen to that. If you guys haven't listened to his podcasts on that about dry fire practice, go over there and go to the Personal Armament Podcast and listen to that. I can't say it any better, but dry fire is extremely, definitely important. I practice a lot of drawing and getting a good sight picture and pressing the trigger, dry firing. Those are the three things I work on the most. Drawing from my holster, getting a good sight picture, and pressing the trigger. Okay, so Christian says he stumbled upon my show because he was bitten by the 1911 bug and he wanted to own one. He just had to have one. All of his other guns are Glocks. So he looked at Springfield, he looked at Smith & Wesson, Para Ordnance, and then the owner of the only gun shop that he visits showed him a Kimber Ultra CDP2. And he said it was a pretty gun, but he didn't want just something good looking. He wanted something that was reliable and worked. So he got on the internet and he Googled Kimber Ultra CDP2 reviews, and guess what popped up? My show, episode number 26, I think it was, of the Handgun World Show. I did a review on that gun. I went to a range and I fired quite a few rounds. I think I was about 150 rounds, if I remember correctly. I shot through that gun, maybe closer to 200 rounds. Loved it. Wish I owned that gun. That's still on my short list to buy, although I tell you what, a gun dealer not too far from me has the Kimber SIS, which I know Eric Shelton loves that gun, and I can see why he likes it. I'm seriously thinking about picking up a 4-inch model of the Kimber SIS. I might unload my Kimber 9mm 1911. Not quite sure. I can't afford to keep both of them. I might do that in favor of the 45 just because, hey, it's a 45, and I don't own a 45 right now. So I got to narrow down between a Kimber SIS or just get an M&P 45. But anyway, so Christian goes out and he buys this Kimber Ultra CDP because of the great reviews that I gave it on my podcast. Well, again, like I said, I guess I have to go pick up my commission check from Kimber, don't I? Anyway, he says, my G19 is the equivalent of an arm or a hand or a foot or any other major body part. When it comes to concealed carry for me, it's my G19. And he continues, gun ownership has changed my life completely. I think about things that never occurred to me before. Safety issues as well as health issues, and you start to read about gun ownership, and it's not just about carrying and shooting a gun. It's also about self-awareness and awareness of your surroundings. Boy, isn't that the truth. He says, I came to realize I was so ill-prepared in so many areas. Disaster, being attacked, being robbed, you name it. I had never really thought about it until I started researching responsible gun ownership. He says, Bob, you often talk about guns and holsters and sights and such, and maybe I'll get to it when I catch up with the podcast, but I think that something you should address is a good flashlight and flashlight control when using a firearm in self-defense situation. Well, he sent me this email before segment number one. And so what a great coincidence, because that's what we just got done talking about was flashlights in segment number one of this show. Anyway, Christian, thanks very much. There was a lot more to it, but I don't want to go on and on and on. It was a great email. I appreciate this. I'm flattered that I had an impact on someone's decision to carry a gun, own a gun, to improve their life, things like that. It's great. It's just, that's exactly why I do this show, and I'm going to keep on doing it. And folks, this is not my full-time job. I barely make a dollar on this show when it's all said and done, when you think about my time and my expenses and everything, but I don't care. I don't care. I don't do this for the money. If I did this for the money, I would certainly starve. I just do it because it is a blast, all right? It's so much fun. And so with that, I think this is a good opportunity for me to sign off episode 78. In the upcoming episode, I'm going to have a little bit of information from Steve Z, an excellent competition shooter. He's on the forums. He listens to the show. He's a USPSA. I think he's an A or a masterclass shooter. You'll find out more about that in the next episode. And we're going to talk about sighted shooting and pointed shooting and the mental aspects. I'm going to pick up that theme again and continue on with that, because that seems to be a popular topic. And I'm also going to probably have, I'm going to try to have a little bit of information, kind of a precursor to the close range gunfighting class that I'll be taking the week of the, I think it's the 20th, 20th and 21st, which is this coming weekend. So I want to say thank you for tuning in. Keep it coming. And I'm Bob Main. This is the Handgun World Show. And folks, the reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Thanks for tuning in. Catch you next time. Bye-bye. I'm a desperate man. Send lawyers, guns, and money. This shit has hit the fan. Guns and money.